Live from the Carter Subaru Studio, this is the Jason Brandt Show. If you want to join the conversation tonight on this beautiful Tuesday evening, send us an email. Go to mynorthwest.com. Click on the Linwood Honda inbox, search for the name Jason Rantz. We have a jam-packed show, as always, set for you today. State Representative Drew McEwen, he is a Republican from Washington's 35th district. He's going to stop by to explain why he is starting the process of impeachment for State Auditor Troy Kelly. LaShawna Williams, she is a certified member of Cuddle Professionals International. She's going to stop by at 9:32 to explain why she just opened a cuddle club in West Seattle. Yes, a cuddle club. It's actually a thing. And we've got so much more. As I woke up to yet another symbolic effort from, I guess, a well-intentioned activist this morning, this time a woman perched on top of a tripod blocking the entrance to Shell Oil's fuel transfer station in Seattle, I had a thought. It sort of dawned on me that environmentalists, the local ones, the ones that we've seen, the ones that have gotten so much of the media attention, they don't actually care enough about the environment to lead to any meaningful change. In other words, the environmentalists here are lazy. First, if you haven't heard, this morning an activist by the name of Annie Luckins decided that she would concoct a tripod in front of a Shell Oil station. She sat on top of it in an attempt to create a blockade.
We've been deluded into thinking that we don't have a choice in this, but we do. We do have a choice. We can make these decisions, and I want everyone to know that.
She wants everyone to know that. She was speaking this morning to Seattle's Morning News with Dave Ross. Her goal was to shut down operations, and since she did that for a few hours, it was successful, I guess.
We shut down operations this morning,
nice.
And that was our objective, to A, shut down the operations at Shell, and B, to call out to Seattle to join into the resistance.
So her goal was to shut down the Shell station for a couple hours. But actually, I don't know if most of you know this. Globally, actually, Shell Oil shut down as a result of this woman's actions globally. They just completely shut down. So good on you, Annie.
Shell has decided to come to Seattle in defiance of climate science, in defiance of our elected official, and in defiance of the subsistence treaty rights of the Inupiat people of the Arctic. So we're here to tell Shell and to tell the people of Seattle that we will resist them.
They will resist them. This morning she said she'd stay put as long as she could. If they can break the rules, so can she.
Shell, like ExxonMobil, like BP, like many of these fossil fuel companies, gets away with trampling on communities and then receiving a small slap on the wrist.
So she basically said, yeah, I'll stay there as long as I can. I saw her in the lobby this afternoon. So she didn't stay there that long because she went on the Ron and Don show earlier this afternoon. And I tried listening. She sort of was sticking to her talking points, man. She was not leaving at all. She was on point. Didn't make much sense, but she was on point. I'll give her that. She says they already know Shell is not listening to her. So they're just trying to basically get more support from people like you and me.
We're here to communicate with the people of Seattle, and we're here to communicate with the people all over the world who have a stake in this, and we're here to grow a movement.
She's here to grow a movement. Now, sure, they will engage in a lot of symbolic actions. She'll throw out a bunch of rhetoric. But consider what a win would be for them. Consider what a win would be for Annie. The drilling of the Arctic won't actually stop. That's not going to stop. They've got permission from the Obama administration to move forward. They're going to move forward and drill for oil. Oil won't actually slow down. Oil use will still be there at record numbers. Shell will actually use more energy to float on over to another port for docking, making their carbon footprint even larger than it already is. So the win? It's a symbolic environmentalist win that would cost the area about 400 high-paying jobs, millions of dollars in economic stimulation to the city, to the region. This is a movement. This environmentalist movement is a movement of symbolism, not results, but symbolism. They want to look like they're doing something when all they're really doing is fulfilling some ego-driven desire to appear to do something, to get on television, to get on the radio, say, hey, look, Mom, look, Dad, I'm doing something meaningful. I got on the television. Oh, okay, good for you. But really what this is, it's the equivalent of some person who's out of shape, some out of shape guy getting a gym membership, but not actually going to the gym to work out. Well, I bought the membership. Oh, okay, good. But you're still overweight. So unless you're actually going to do something like exercise, that membership is just a symbol of your commitment to do something without the actual doing something. We've been told for how many years now that the longer we wait on climate change, the longer we wait, the more irreversible the damage is going to be. So we've been ignoring it in any meaningful way since we heard those messages. I imagine that means, you know, we're close to irreversible damage than we were when
in a lockbox.
Al Gore was warning us about it while laughing his way to the bank, profiting off of all of his fear-mongering or truth crusading, however you choose to look at it.
In the last few months, it has been harder and harder to misinterpret the signs that our world is spinning out of kilter.
If they truly believed the monumental consequences and doom associated with oil use, they wouldn't be going after Shell, right? If you think about it, they wouldn't be going after Shell. They'd be going after you and me, the consumers of oil. They'd be blocking gas stations, car dealerships, streets, parking lots. They'd break onto the tarmac of SeaTac, prevent another flight from taking off, burning thousands of gallons of fuel. But they're not doing that, are they? They'll go on television. They'll get on radio shows. They'll have some fun sitting on top of a tripod because, you know, they don't actually believe the doomsday nonsense that they push. I don't think they believe that. They just feel empty inside and they need a fight. They need a movement to get upon. They need something to fight and get behind, but they don't really believe the end is near. They might believe in the basics of global climate change. I believe in the basics. But they don't actually think that the continued use of oil is going to kill this planet. They don't. Because if they did, they wouldn't be so damn lazy about it. They wouldn't be so ego-driven about it. The activist on the tripod, Annie, God bless her, I'm willing to bet all the materials that she used in that tripod, all the clothes on her back, were either created using oil and gas or transported to the store she purchased them from using oil or gas. So just keep that in mind. She's not actually dedicated to the cause. She'll do everything she can. She'll stay on there as long as she can until she gets invited on Cairo Radio. Then she comes down to the studio. She's in the lobby for what seemed like an hour. Then she gets on and then she walks away. She's not dedicated to the cause. She's addicted to the attention she's getting. All of these folks are. If you thought the world would literally end as a result of what man is doing to the planet, wouldn't you take more drastic measures? Wouldn't you do something a little bit more meaningful? Wouldn't you disrupt more than just the docking of a rig that will end up just finding a new dock? Talk about NIMBYism. Not in my backyard. That's what this amounts to. They're still going to drill. You're just not going to let them park their drill here. Okay, but they're still drilling. So what exactly do you think it is you're doing? Raising awareness? How long do you have to be at it before we realize, hey, we're not buying what you're selling? This isn't a new movement. This is a movement that's been here for how long now? And they've been pulling these hijinks for how long? How many years? And yet we're still using gas and oil. In fact, we're using more of it. Oilprice.com notes, gasoline demand is up. In January of this year alone, gas demand was up an average of 725,000 barrels per day. About 10 hours ago, OPEC put out a report that they expect demand for crude oil to increase by 1.18 million barrels per day. So even if you believe what you're saying, and I'm wrong, and I'm just absolutely wrong, man, you guys are diehard believers, then in the very least, understand you're failing at this message. Maybe, change the strategy up a little bit. Or is this not really about that? It's more about your ego. Send us an email if you disagree. It is okay, especially if you find yourself being one of those environmentalists I just called out. MyNorthwest.com. Click on the Linwood Honda inbox. Search for the name Jason Rantz. Good news. When we come back, I'm going to tell you how you are going to pay even more money to make it harder for you to drive around the city of Seattle. It's the Jason Rantz Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Facebook.com/Jason Rantz Show is where you can go behind the scenes of the show. Check out what it is we all look like. Nothing special, not going to lie. But you can check us out. Don't give me that look. Producer Nicole, you look fine. Facebook.com/Jason Rantz Show. So let's move on a little bit. because I have got some really, really good news for Seattle drivers. Did you know that for the
low price
of $60, you too can be forced to be even more inconvenienced on the road? I've been waiting to use this
low price
for so long. I'm so glad I got to do that. $60. Next month, Seattle drivers will pay an extra $60 on their vehicle license fees. Not to fill potholes, not to paint the streets, not to do, I don't know, much needed transportation infrastructure work. No. You are spending that money to better fund public transportation that you won't take. But if you do, you're actually hurting yourself even more. It's just this huge cluster of just ideological nonsense. Here's King 5 explaining the fee and talking with Councilman Tom Rasmussen.
So what it means is there'll be less overcrowding and more frequency and more reliability of transit service in Seattle.
Transportation Committee Chairman Tom Rasmussen says the extra revenue means additional routes and more buses on current routes. Car owners aren't the only ones paying for this. City sales tax went up 0.1% April 1st. The improved bus service will come online in June and September.
That's a very significant increase. I mean, some routes are going to have 10 and 12-minute service. Others are going to have 15-minute service. Many routes are going to have much more frequent and expanded service.
This morning, council members will consider legislation to hire staff in the city to monitor Metro's work, to plan the routes, and also to authorize outreach into the community to let people know about the changes. And part of that outreach will mean letting people know that low-income residents will get a $20 mail-in rebate for that $60 additional charge on their tax.
Oh, that's good. So if you're poor, you only have to spend $40 more a year. Oh, that's thank you, City of Seattle. So with an average salary resting pretty comfortably above $50,000 in Seattle, over $90,000 if you're working in the tech industry, the city's leadership convinced voters, convinced you people listening to me right now, if you live in the City of Seattle, especially the ones who don't actually own cars, they convinced you to make people like me, to make drivers pay for services they're not even going to use. But the weird thing is the city wants them to. The city wants them to use the bus. They push policies that end up forcing drivers to abandon their evil cars so they can take up public transport, so they can take the bus, so maybe they can bike to work. So let's try and figure out the wisdom in basically saying, hey, let's tie funding of a fee. Let's tie funding to transportation policies that are actually meant to burden drivers so much that they end up abandoning their cars. It's like the cap and trade program we talked about yesterday. Everyone says, okay, we want to get rid of pollution, but we're also going to tie the future in education investment and funding to pollution. So I don't understand. You're tying funding to Metro buses, to the Seattle bus system, to this fee. At the exact same time, you're actively trying to get people out of their cars. So it means they won't be paying the fee if they actually abandon the car, right? Which means bus funding is in a bigger hole than it was before because you've just added more buses. You've just added more routes, more drivers. So now you can't actually pay for them if you get people to stop using their cars. On top of which, if this all happens at once, if everything happens at once, think about the hole you just put yourself in. If all these people decide, okay, you know what, I'm going, finally, you have convinced me, Scott Kubley, director of SDOT, Mayor Ed Murray, you have convinced me, I am going to say no more to my car, it's evil, it's ugly, I hate you. I'm going to jump on a bus. Well, if enough people end up doing that, well, then they're not paying those fees. So you've now got more people using the service, you've got more buses on the road, you've got more drivers for those buses. Cool. Good for you. How are you funding it? Where's the funding coming from? You just created an underfunded bus system, which is what you were just complaining about to begin with. Where's the value in that? Where's the wisdom in putting together that kind of plan? It doesn't make any sense. And so now me, who decided, hey, my car is evil, I hate you. Oh, God, I hate you, car. I all of a sudden get on the bus and then I realize, oh, it's an awful experience because it's underfunded. And so now maybe I'll say, was this the right move? It's like basic customer service. That's not what you do. You don't want your first point of contact with a company, with a business, with a service to be a bad situation, to be a bad incident. And yet that's exactly what we're doing. But that's smart. Good on you guys. It's the Jason Rancho. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Remember that dumb stunt to put the F word on top of that Starbucks sign in Capitol Hill? The guy behind it has been discovered, apparently, by a blogger with The Stranger. Now, they're actually calling him an artist. They're putting the F word in front of a Starbucks logo. That's actually now art, apparently, which tells me the culture is dying. But okay, maybe I'm not hip enough. I don't know art. I was a politics major in school. I don't know. I guess maybe that's now. I'm going to go outside, and producer Nicole, let's do this. I'm going to spit on the sidewalk. Let's take a photo of it. Let's put like a cool Instagram filter on it. And art.
Hey, it could be.
Right?
Although this, you know, F word above the Starbucks sign looked like it took some time.
Oh,
so
I'm
maybe
sure
it's just the time that
you
put into it.
So apparently if you put time into something,
yes, so spit it's slowly.
Art. Yeah, okay, I'll spit. It'll be the longest spit in the history of spit.
There you go.
Right on the sidewalk. We'll call it spitting on East Lake.
I'm kind of gagging a little bit right now.
Yeah, me too. So they found this, the stranger found this artist, quote unquote, and they interviewed him basically to figure out why and how he did this. Though they spend shockingly little time on the why, and they spend more time on the how, because I guess they're impressed that this guy created the F word in a font that kind of looks like the Starbucks sign font. Okay, cool. Art. Now, they won't give this guy's name. He agreed to the interview basically only if they would guarantee the anonymity would be granted to him. And so they're like, okay, we're down. We're not going to say your name. And I imagine the real reason behind that is, well, you know, he broke the law. And like many activists, they're cowardly and they don't want to get punished for their illegal behavior. Here's Detective Patrick Michaud with the SPD.
It's definitely a crime. It's trespassing. And then if you damage any of their property, you have property damage on top of that. So you got a couple of misdemeanor crimes there you could tag together to equal at least a few days in jail, which you would kind of want to avoid even if you are trying to make a statement.
Although I would argue it's actually a microaggression to punish someone. So, you know. So the big question we all have is why exactly the F word in front of the Starbucks logo? Why exactly is your message F Starbucks? Now, the artist, I'm not going to call him the artist anymore. I'm going to call him the vandal pretending to be Bansky. Let's say the vandal pretending to be Bansky said, when I initially started working on this, the Race Together campaign was in the news and anti-Starbucks feelings around town were at quite a fever pitch. When a company like this grows and reaches a certain level of bigness, the public doesn't have a say in how it operates. If you have a difference of opinion, you're stuck with it. That's our condition, and I want to fight it. Can anyone make sense of that? That made no sense. What does that mean? What are the words that I just read, that quote coming from this vandal pretending to be Bansky, what does that mean? When a company gets big, the public doesn't have a say in how it operates? If you have a difference of opinion, you're stuck with it. What? Like, what does that mean? The public ultimately has the say. First of all, Starbucks is a publicly traded company. So there's that. But beyond that, the public has the ultimate say because you're the one who's actually buying the coffee. You're the one buying the product. You are the consumer. The consumer has the ultimate say. You visit MyNorthwest.com yesterday and you got a great example of this. Based on consumer demand, Starbucks is now doing the mini cups for the Frappuccinos. That was the consumer saying, hey, I kind of want a smaller version of this because I don't want to drink, you know, 9,000 calories in a s'mores Frappuccino, which I haven't tried. And God, I want one so badly. And so they say, hey, give us something smaller. And they decided as a company, yeah, actually, this is a really good idea. We're going to throw this out there, see how that goes. So that's the consumer having a say in how it operates. Now, maybe that's too frivolous of an example. Okay, deal. Let's talk about something else. How about gay rights activists calling for companies to start offering domestic partnership benefits? Starbucks is doing that? Oh, okay. That's good. Yeah, they offer healthcare coverage and adoption assistance for you and your domestic partners. Weird how Starbucks was so open to the input from the activists out there. Weird how that works. But let's say, hey, they still don't do all that you say. The vandal pretending to be Bansky says, if you have a difference of opinion, you're stuck with it. Yeah, it's called the real world. You individually don't get to determine how Starbucks is run the same way I don't get to determine whether or not the crap you produce is art or not. We get a say, we give our opinion, and get this. So weird how this works. The world doesn't have to listen to us. We can give out our opinion. I could come out here every single night and give my opinion and say how things should be. The world society can say, yeah, we're not going to listen to you, Jason Rantz. Shut it. I'm okay with that. I prefer not to live in a world where nothing is challenged, where people can't disagree. You don't like that? Too bad. Stop acting like a child. But he's fighting it. The vandal pretending to be Bansky, he's fighting it. He's fighting the system by saying F Starbucks. Oh, wow. Look at you. You said the F word. Down with the man. You're so cool. Good for you. So the blogger asks him, hey, why are you expressing your opinion about Starbucks through this particular action? Here's his answer. In the placement of the letters and the font, I wanted to do something that confused people who rely on media signs to guide them towards something. I didn't destroy or damage anything. I created. I wanted to make it look like maybe Starbucks could have been the ones who did it. As an artist, I'm constantly observing what gets labeled as vandalism and how we as a society decide what kind of content it's okay to barrage ourselves with. Oh, I get it. It's not vandalism because he created. It's not vandalism because he created. Like a seedling blossoming into a flower. It was organic. It was an organic, natural creation to F Starbucks. He was just following the day, reaching for the sun. Hippie, hippie, hippie nonsense. It's not art. Yeah, it's not art. He doesn't actually believe that. I have to imagine he doesn't actually believe that. I'd like to go over to this guy's house. More likely a studio apartment on the hill he's paying way too much for. And just sort of tag his walls with obscenities. We'll spit on his walls. We'll call it art. See what he says. That's not vandalism. That's art. I create it. So they continue the interview, and I got to say, let's go through some of this and see if I'm able to get through it. By the way, I said Bansky. It's Banksy. Sorry. I'm not hip. My apologies. Thank you, Matt, for sending us that email. The stranger asked, what was going through your mind when you were putting up the sign? The guy pretending to be Banksy says, it was dark. It was 3:30 a.m. I knew I wanted to pick a Monday night when traffic to and from the bars would be an absolute minimum. I had a friend who hauled the ladder for me and held it so I could climb. Being a graffiti artist who's been arrested before, I was pretty paranoid. Yeah, by the way, when you're someone who's a vandal, it makes sense to be a little paranoid that you might get caught breaking the law. But I also have a lot of experience dealing with nerves when the time for action comes. I just had to realize up there, dressed in black on top of a building in the middle of the night, nobody could see me. Oh, he's like a ninja. Coming away from the scene, looking back at where I had been, I realized I probably wasn't very visible at all. Now, he's an invisible ninja. Good on him. So the blogger asks, few people actually got to see the sign in person, so it's taken on this odd mythical quality. What? No, it hasn't. It hasn't taken on a mythic quality, okay? It's a dumb sign. It's legitimately the dumbest, most crude, obscene sign you can think of. Good for you. You said the F word. They continue, almost like our generation's version of the will the last person leaving Seattle please turn out the light sign, except stranger and more specific. Oh, my God. I can't do it. Just play them. I can't do it. I'm breaking. I can't. I'm not even going to read you the answer. This stuff just drives me absolutely up a wall. You want to go do our artwork outside? Get your phone.
No, I'm kind of grossed out by the idea.
So lame. Jeff, you're in. Jeff will do it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm in. That sounds very artistic to me.
It doesn't feel very on brand. That's the one downside.
Probably not.
It's the Jason Rancho. If you want to join the conversation, mynorthwest.com. Click on the Linwood Honda inbox. Search for the name Jason Rance. Welcome back to the Jason Rance Show. Go behind the scenes, facebook.com/Jason Rance Show. We're looking tonight for 7 likes. We shoot very, very low, so we actually achieve the goals and we don't feel like total failures at the end of the day. facebook.com/Jason Rance Show. If we do get the 7 likes, we will be posting a different kind of art piece, our version of the artwork. We just need 7 likes. You get me 7 likes, you got the original Jason Rance art piece posted. facebook.com/Jason Rance Show. Just hit the like button. Usually if one person kind of has a problem with the spouse's inability and disinterest in helping with the chores around the house. At the most, you kind of get into a shouting match, right? Hey, I told you to clean up. Oh, don't make me come. Like, that's usually what happens, and that's how it ends. At the end of the day, you apologize. Someone gets the stuff done, and then you move on. But for one Marysville couple, they actually ended up turning to a gun to settle matters. King 5 reports that a woman accused of firing a gun during an argument with her husband said she was angry he wasn't helping around the house, but wasn't trying to shoot him. Don't worry. Officers arrested 54-year-old Starlene Roth on Saturday for investigation of attempted first-degree murder, but her lawyer said the police report didn't show that Roth was actually trying to kill her husband. The couple, they've been married for more than 30 years, and at some point it's only natural to have the feeling of wanting to fire a warning shot at your husband. We've all been there, right? I'm kidding. According to the probable cause documents, the husband had recently returned from treatment in the hospital for an ongoing medical condition. He said Roth was upset that he, quote, hadn't been able to do anything around the house. Oh, my God. During the argument, Roth also reportedly broke a glass vase, knocked over the barbecue while the husband was cooking ribs, and broke the television remote. In other words, she sounds like, you know, she doesn't have a temper problem.
No war hangers!
My God.
What's wire hangers doing in this closet? I'm when sorry. I told you no wire hangers
Joan, I'm sorry. They didn't have the wooden or plastic ones.
Ever!
I'm sorry. In an interview with police, Roth said she had, quote, a lot on her plate, and she blew up.
Ever!
An Everett District Court judge found probable cause to hold Roth for investigation of attempted second-degree murder and set bail at $250,000. Does she deserve jail? I don't know. I look at this, I'm like, give her anger management courses, right? We don't need to send her to jail.
Depends on how close the shots came, I think. You know, if they're within 3-4 feet, that's kind of pushing
it. She's a good aim. I mean.
Hopefully.
I mean, she knew what she, yeah, well, man, I don't know. Let's ask the husband. Let's just say, listen, do you feel comfortable or do you feel safe? The husband is saying, yeah, look, a lot's on her plate. We totally get it. She's just a little angry. You know, relax.
Ever!
Okay. No?
More than therapy. I think that needs some.
What does she need?
Institutions. I don't know.
I don't know. We've all been there. I've been upset with myself. I walked.
That you pulled out a gun?
I got so upset. I walked into my apartment last week after the Sounders game. I got home and I went into my bedroom. I looked down. It's like all my clothes were on the floor. I'm like, oh, God, you're disgusting. What the hell is wrong with you, Jason? I got mad at myself because I wasn't picking up the clothes.
But you did not pull out a gun.
I didn't. I slapped myself a few times and then I watched a DVD. That's it. Okay. Meanwhile, I guess it's that time of year when people are more likely to encounter bears. I was walking Capitol Hill last weekend, ran into a few bears. I don't know what the big deal is. Oh. Those bears. I was looking at this story. I'm like, now it makes sense. No, no one, no laugh. Really? Nothing?
I was dying in here.
No. God, tough crowd tonight.
That was a good one, Jason.
Okay, so considerably different when you think about running into a black bear. One was sighted in Redmond on Sunday. It apparently knocked down a trash bin looking for food, which is an action I'm told by King 5 that is quite normal for bears to do. And the bears are coming out of hibernation right now because it's starting to get warm. They wake up. And so King 5 gave us some tips on how to deal with black bears, by the way, a microaggression. So let's go through some of these things. You know, we looked at some of the data. I was just kind of curious as to whether or not this actually happens. And since what, Nicole, the middle of the 1910?
No, it was right about 1900.
Okay, so 1900, we had someone in the area be killed.
Oh, by the study went back that far to the 1900, about 1900.
How many dead people as a result of running into black bears?
In 1945, there was one death.
Okay, one death. So this is like, we really need to pay a lot of close attention to these tips. Okay, so if you see a black bear out in the woods, maybe in Redmond or, you know, you're walking down South Lake Union and you happen to see a bear, number one, do not approach. Do not approach that bear. If your presence causes the bear to change its behavior, like if it stops feeding or changes its direction, you're too close. I would argue at that point, you're done. You're dead. If you see a bear, just go the other way.
It seems like maybe wives are more dangerous than bears, though.
Yeah, that last story is a perfect example.
A lot more dangerous.
You see an angry wife saying, hey, you're not doing your chores. You're not doing your stuff. You should just run.
Never!
And even if he has your picnic basket, turn the other way.
Turn the other way. It's not worth it. Another tip, stay at least 100 yards away so you don't disturb the bears. They are wild animals and their behavior is sometimes unpredictable. This is especially true if there are cubs around. I've never quite understood why someone would see a bear and like, oh my God, that's so cool. Let me sneak in and try and get a better look. No, don't do that. That's awful. Number three, if it's a lone bear and it starts to follow you, don't run. Slowly back away to increase the distance between you and the bear. Yeah, that's not happening. If a bear's coming after me, I'm running. I'm sorry. I know you're not supposed to. Apparently, everyone's supposed to have like nerves of steel and just slowly, slowly, slowly back away. I'm backing up. I'm backing away. No. Don't do that. I know that that's what you're supposed to do. So, you know, do what they do. I'm going to guess that if I was in this position, I'd just run. I would legitimately just run away.
You're going to be number two.
I would exactly. I would be dead. And then they say, with black bears, so now specifically with black bears, act aggressively by making loud noises and making yourself as large as possible. No, don't do that. Because you know, here's exactly why I know that that's a bad idea. Because if the bear acted aggressively towards me and made loud noises and made itself seem as large as possible, I'd get very scared and then get defensive. I'd assume that it's about to attack me, so I would get into a defensive mode and try to actually kill the bear. And I don't want to kill the bear because I like animals. Can you do that?
Take the bear barehanded.
Okay, enough with the bear puns. Jesus. Hold on. You know, I'm very grateful to Jesus. Okay, go back to sleep. I'm very grateful for King Five for providing these tips. I just feel like I would not be able to actually go through with them. I'm sorry. Act aggressively by making loud noises and make yourself appear as large as possible. How do you even do that? And what kind of noise? And then, by the way, I'm going to get self-conscious. I'm going to be like, am I making a fool of myself in front of this black bear? Is it going to go back home and tell its little black bear wife, little black bear kids, hey, you know, I ran into this dummy in the woods today.
What happened to the play dead approach?
I don't think that that's... Are bears that dumb that they don't think you're that they think you're dead? I mean, this is like the zombie thing. Like in The Walking Dead, they can pretend that they're dead, but they're going to know they're not dead, the zombies, and then they eat you, and then you become a zombie. I don't want to become a zombie, and I don't want to get eaten by a bear. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to stay out of the woods. That's why I don't go outside. That's why I stay indoors as much as humanly possible. That's why I'm so pale. Is it summer yet? It's the Jason Rant Show.